Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. www.facebook.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Monday, July the 27th. We're beginning a three-part series on worship today with Cantor Philip Magnus. Today we're going to talk about young people in worship, be they children or those we usually call the youth in worship. Now, of course, everyone is concerned about this and has been for decades. How do we bring the young people to church on Sunday morning? How do we keep them coming to church on Sunday morning? And the solution has generally been to kind of survey the felt needs of young people, be they children or young adults, and then essentially dismantle everything that has been and rebuild it in the image of the children or the image of the youth. And that's been considered the conventional wisdom for how you do those two things: get them to church, keep them in church. Although we're beginning to see after a couple decades that this might have proven kind of short-sighted, because you can't really remain in that mode forever, can you? Some churches try. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Cantor Philip Magnus is cantor at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, business officer for Liturgy Solutions. Cantor Magnus, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Todd. Good to be here.
What are some of the worst solutions, worst things that congregations do when they're concerned about children and worship?
Some of the worst things that a congregation can do as far as children and youth, if I were to tick off a list, I would say, if I had some diabolical plan to hinder the growth of young people and growing in the wisdom and stature of God, I would say get rid of the ordinaries. Get rid of those spiritual songs, the canticles that we sing every week. Abandon the church year. Obviously, you know, every congregation keeps Christmas and Easter, but, you know, get rid of the changing colors of the paraments. Ignore the saints' days, the whole pattern of, you know, Advent and Lent, nix the Advent candles, that kind of a thing. Don't let Pentecost be read. Get rid of the palms on Palm Sunday. So really downplay the church year. Third thing I would do if I were really wanting to marginalize the children would be to minimize ceremony and action. Don't have any gospel processions. Do the Lord's Supper with the smallest amount of ceremony possible. Maybe just say the words of institution and quickly cue up the people. And replace communal singing, the idea of the family of God singing together with performance-based music that would be beyond their ability to participate in.
So, in other words, if you were trying to undermine the spiritual growth and maturity of today's youth on Sunday morning, you'd do pretty much everything that has been done by the church popularly for the last 30 years.
Well, much of it, yes. As I went through my list, I did outline many things that choices congregations have made or directions they have taken for the sake of becoming more modern or trying to reach out to non-Christian or marginally church neighbors. I suppose that hits the nail on the head, Todd.
Okay, you have, at least my understanding is you have traveled quite a bit in the last several years, visiting churches of all different stripes, trying to see what's happening on Sunday morning. Give us an example of churches that you have seen on Sunday morning who are doing exactly what the church ought to do when it comes to young people in worship. What are they doing? What have you seen?
Well, that's a great question. As I travel around the church over the past few years, sadly, it's a lot easier to talk about what is going on in the church that is disappointing. But there are bright spots out there. One bright spot has been when I have visited a Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston. Another bright spot would be St. John's in Wheaton. So there are bright spots out there, including a small parish that I visited in Rockton, Illinois. So there are positive things to say. And what I see happening there is a more young families that are getting their kids up in front where they can see what is going on. Use of things like psalm refrains, which I think are very good because they are tuneful and the whole congregation's on kind of an even keel with them, and their repetition serves a liturgical purpose of contextualizing the psalm, but also they are short melodies that young people can grab onto, and you can and kids get habituated into performance in the liturgy, especially the younger children. There's really three types of church song, Todd. You have the more complex, through-composed spiritual songs like the Gloria that are a bit longer, and they have a little more art into them, and it's because the church sings them over and over Sunday after Sunday. And so they need to have some interest in them and some intricacy. But because they are sung every week, and at least a congregation that doesn't change the settings every week like some do, and that would be also something that congregation shouldn't do. I'm all for having two or three settings the congregation knows to highlight the church year. But given that, you know, we sing the ordinary week after week after week, then kids get that repetition, that reinforcement. Well, then in the middle you have hymns. They are of moderate complexity, not as complex as the canticles are of the ordinary. And the hymns are a little more challenging for the younger children, and so the art of hymn singing needs to be taught over time. And perhaps later I could elaborate on how we do that at Bethany through our graded music program. But you're going to lose your 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds with the hymnody, but then at least for large swaths of it, and different kids at different ages will get into the hymnody at different points. But when you get to the psalm refrains or the offertories or anything like that, maybe a refrain of a hymn or a psalm that's sung during the distribution of the Lord's Supper, there you get again to a point of accessibility, because there you have the simpler musical constructs, because those short responses are written to be immediately accessible by the assembly. And so just as the adults in the congregation pick very quickly up on a little refrain, such as the congregation sings, "The Lord is my light and my salvation, of whom shall I be afraid?" Responsively as then maybe the cantor or the choir does the verses to Psalm 27, and then the congregation has their point. Well, the 4- and 5-year-old can do that if they're sing along with mom and dad, as long as the parents can encourage them to do that. And I've noticed as our choristers and children in our congregation get older, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds are often leading their family in singing some of these tuneful refrains.
I noticed something with our kids, and I've noticed with other kids as well. Even before our children were able to speak, that is, you know, carry on a cogent, germane conversation with their parents beyond just a few words, because they were every Sunday, you know, sitting in the pew with mom, dad up front, and hearing these things again, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, we could not restrain them from trying to sing along, even when they had no idea exactly what they were saying. And sometimes when they were, I mean, we're talking about 1 and 2 years old.
Yes, the littles, yes.
They were just singing their own thing while everyone else sang, and sometimes they were close and sometimes they weren't. And then in time, with the passage of maybe 6 months, I'd hear my son over the baby monitor in his crib, singing himself to sleep with sections of the liturgy, these things that repeated over and over again every Sunday. Not an especially pious little boy, by the way, but it was getting stuck in his mind. like one of those earworms they talk about, a song you hear and you can't get it out of your head. What's the advantage of that?
Last time, Todd, we talked about hardwiring our kids to be Lutheran, and I think that is part of it. I'm all for explaining the liturgy and explaining things to people as part of our catechesis. It's how we grow in the faith. But sometimes we feel like, or at least we have this idea in the church, that we must explain and teach everything before we do it. And I think it's actually advantageous for young people to learn the family habits and family ways of worship and have their minds and their habits predisposed to growing in our Lutheran faith, our Lutheran confession, or for the various other folks out there in Radio Land. I know we have a lot of Reformed listeners on issues, et cetera. You know, growing in your faith tradition of your communion, but having those things out there in the children's minds form those wonderful building blocks, and then it's a lot easier to teach them. What does this mean when they're at that logic phase of development, when they're ready to learn what things mean? And here we're moving beyond the 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds, Todd. 6-, 7-, and 8-year-olds aren't ready to get into the logic of what everything means. So at this stage of development, when they're in grammar school or going into grammar school, they just need the building blocks of knowledge. And what we need to do in the church is give them the building blocks of faith, and that includes the building blocks of how the Christian family worships together.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Cantor Philip Magnus of Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois. Part one of our 3-part series with him on worship today, youth and worship. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in Word and Sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.
Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. www.facebook.com.
Historic, authentic Christian radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois, and Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Promote, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about youth and worship. Cantor Philip Magnus is our guest. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback at issuesetc.org. Philip, you spoke before the break about children younger than this, but now let's talk about kids as they enter what you call the logic phase. That is, they're putting the building blocks together and making an attempt to understand and learn what it is worship is, what it is God is doing there on Sunday morning.
Yes, I like to talk about how we splash around in our baptisms every day, but let me take that analogy a bit further. So our young kids learn to splash around in their baptism. Youth, especially in our athletic culture, they're ready to get into the deep end of the pool and start swimming. And I think as we move into older elementary school and into junior high, they can grow into the things that that we would like them to grow into. And I think the way you do this is as soon as they are able, you start giving them responsibilities and opportunities that adults have in congregational life. So when you have a children's choir of 10, 11, and 12-year-old children, don't give them, for example, some kind of cute song that might have some instant gratification at the kid's first choir practice, but rather give them the same role in the divine service the adult choir has, with leading the psalm of the day, singing a stanza on the hymn of the day, and you will find wonderful rewards for that. The kids growing in the hymnody and things that will grow great dividends, not just for the service to the church, but also in the spiritual lives of the young. I remember doing leading a children's choir at Trinity Peoria back in the late 90s and singing Wake Awake for Night is Flying, and they took the middle stanza of that when it was the hymn of the day. Later that year, during Advent, our choir for Advent Vespers sang a Bach cantata on Wake Awake, Wachet Auf. And after that service, I remember this child bounding down the bell tower with her best friend, Natalie Teichman, and the girl's name was Holly. Holly Harold, if you're out there, hello. Holly said to her friend gleefully, "That has got to be the best hymn ever." Well, about 10 years later, she got married, and she chose Wake Awake for Night is Flying as the processional hymn for her wedding.
So, in other words, it actually works when tried.
Yes, the liturgy really serves the church well, and too often it's not that the liturgy has been tried and found wanting. It's just that the liturgy hasn't been done well, and so people don't appreciate how well it nurtures faith and hardwires young people to be Lutheran.
Let's talk about when we talk kids, and especially young people, we also mm-hmm. need to talk, the technical term is catechesis.
Correct.
But that is instruction of a certain form, that is kind of the question-answer form that focuses on, in the Lutheran tradition, the six chief parts, which are Ten Commandments, Creed, Lord's Prayer, Baptism, Absolution, the Lord's Supper. How can this be incorporated into the worship life of Sunday morning to benefit our youth, really all of us, since we all continue to learn these things throughout life?
Well, I'm not sure if we have a liturgical role for the catechism itself as the catechism, but I would say this. We talked last time about the Sing the Faith songs that you graciously promoted on your radio program that CPH has made available, and it is our hope that by having the young people in the grammar phase of development really learn the catechism and take it to heart, that they will be much better positioned for swimming in the deep end when they are reaching, when they're in, you know, confirmation and going into youth group. As far as the worship life on Sunday morning, I think this really then connects to the sermon. And, you know, I don't have any kind of empirical proof on this other than just anecdotal, you know, I just have anecdotal evidence, but I have noticed in my 17, 18 years of doing church music, that the young people, and this is a generalization because there certainly are many exceptions, but younger people who are well catechized by their parents, many of whom tend to be very involved in the worship life of the church as choristers and as instrumentalists, they tend to be much more attentive to the preaching. I'll always remember going back from Bach Vespers at a non-LCMS church where I had taken a group of kids from Peoria, and I was so pleased when one of the kids on the way back, Robin Wagner, asked, "Cantor, that wasn't an LCMS church, was it?" And I said, "Well, no, Robin, it wasn't." And she said, "Well, I thought so because they didn't preach the gospel." And so this child, you know, you expect the typical eighth grader to zone out, but because she has a wonderful parents who've catechized her well, but also I would think, going hand in hand with that, her singing of the Lord's song had nurtured her in the faith, and so that she took the whole service quite seriously and was very attentive and was able to see that the homily that was delivered at that particular Vespers really just had had no gospel of life in it.
Ken in Orlando, Florida, emails us, any suggestions for home worship that would help children prepare for Sunday worship?
Oh, most excellent question. I certainly think there are many commendable daily lectionaries out there, but one of the drawbacks to most of the daily lectionaries is they do not point kids towards Sunday, and we've tried different things in our home, and currently at our kids' age, we actually are using the Treasury of Daily Prayer and using the daily lectionary there. But one thing I found helpful in the past when my kids were younger was to take scripture that is for the coming week, and I've seen this suggested in several resources, including Robbie Castleman's Parenting in the Pew. So on Monday, read the Old Testament lesson as your daily chapter with your family. And on Tuesday, pray the psalm together in its entirety. Wednesday, the epistle. Thursday, the gospel. So you're moving toward Sunday morning. Pray the collect that's for the coming Sunday every day together as a family. And if the questioner is Lutheran, or even if you're not Lutheran, you can get a hold of the Lutheran Service Book. It has the wonderful daily prayer offices for families, and one can readily incorporate those in there. Another thing that one can do in daily family devotion that we found very helpful, and this goes back to Todd's previous question to me, is make use of the catechism songs and do catechism drill. And I would say this, this is before I wrote the catechism songs. When you have your catechism time with your older children, 6, 10, 12 years old, have fun with a catechism. It's okay to have fun in family devotions. And in fact, my kids have a nickname for me that it's a kind of a persona I put on when we go through catechism memory, and they call me Catechism Bob. So I don't want to digress too much, but I would definitely tell the commend a system of incorporating the hymn of the day along with the psalm and readings for upcoming Sunday, pray the collect, and plug those into one of the daily offices for your family.
Cantor Philip Magnus is cantor at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, business officer for Liturgy Solutions. You'll find a link to Liturgy Solutions at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Philip, thank you very much. Talk with you again soon.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great night.
Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Philip Magnus about singing the Psalms in our ongoing series on worship. When we come back from this break, we're going to be spending some time with you, our listeners, listening to the Issues Etc. comment line. It's audio open lines for the entire second hour. First, the comment line, then we'll play some audio from some news pieces, one from NPR, one from ABC. The one from National Public Radio has to do with the Southern Baptists, who are, for the first time in a long time, a shrinking denomination. Now, they're still huge, 16 million strong, largest Protestant denomination in the United States. But the Southern Baptists, along with the Roman Catholics, have held the line, more or less, on the ordination of women. Neither of those of the two largest denominations in the U.S. have ordained women, or at least if they have, they haven't done it for very long. Some voices within the Southern Baptist Convention say, well, that's the reason that the church is now shrinking. And one of them, a megachurch pastor you'll hear from on the other side of the break, says, well, we'll look back 50 years from now as Southern Baptists on the way that we have restricted the woman's role in the church the same way we look back on slavery today. I want to know from you, do you think that these churches that hold out, these major denominations that hold out against the ordination of women, can do so forever? And since it is a megachurch pastor who claims that we'll look back on this all like we look back on slavery today, do you expect any time in the future to see a woman heading up the pastoral staff at a megachurch? When we come back, we'll listen to the Issues Etc. comment line and have audio open lines for you. I'm Todd Wilkin, Hour 2 in 7 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.